Hello, everyone. This is Susie Ward, welcoming you to Matthew and Friends. Everyone who knows Matthew through his messages in the books knows his love for animals. He has talked about the wide range of their emotions and intelligence, and that they are multidimensional souls. They are aware that there's no such thing as death. Animals evolve spiritually and intellectually, just as we do. And at one time, all animals and humans lived peaceably together. Matthew says this harmonious relationship is returning, and it will be in full bloom in the better world that is on our near horizon. There's actually already evidence of this. The animals that we consider wild, some of them are showing less fear of humans. And there are also many instances of cross-species friendship, even cases where mothers of one species are nursing and rearing infants of another species. Long, long ago, telepathic communication was commonplace between animals and humans, and we can look forward to that, too. But fortunately for the animals, that close connection has been preserved in some people. And today's show is very dear to my heart because one of those special individuals is with us. Terry O'Hara is a professional animal communicator who has been providing extraordinary services to animals and their families for over 13 years. The help that Terry started giving locally has spread to over 2,000 people and their families nationwide. And this has been solely by word of mouth. This is a great tribute to Terry's abilities, and it also shows people's growing awareness of how much animals can tell us. It's a great privilege and great joy to greet you, Terry. Thank you so much for sharing this time with us.
Thank you, Susie. It's my pleasure to join all of you.
Well, good. You had the ability as a child to talk with animals. How did they make you understand what they were telling you?
Actually, I love how you asked that question, how did they make me understand, because I believe if we're simply listening, we are understanding, and I believe children are better listeners than adults because children have more creative imaginations. They're more open to possibilities. So for me, I don't necessarily feel the animals were making me hear them so much as they were chatting, and I was able to listen and connect with them. And I believe all children are extremely intuitive or telepathic or connected in that way. And it's not until we, unfortunately, go into this culture's form of education, which is very linear and in our heads, and the kids go into schools, and they're taught to think with only their brains and stop listening with their hearts, that's when the disconnect starts to happen. So I believe animals everywhere are offering love and kindness, connections, messages all the time, and it's just a matter of who is listening.
How interesting. But, you know, what you said about children listening, that is true on so many levels, isn't it, Terry?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I read about the examples that you gave about your relationship with your cat, Benji. Would you please share some of those? I think they're absolutely wonderful. That's so specific.
Sure. Well, when I was a child, I had one pet, and his name was Benji, and he was a black and white tomcat. Unfortunately, my parents didn't know any better, and they did not have him neutered. So he was the type of boy that would be very loyal to me, very, very loving, very gentle. I was a little girl. I was about 7 when he came into my life, and we were very, very close. But Benji would every so often take off and disappear for about a week and make black and white kitties around the neighborhood. I later learned where they were all coming from. And so when he would disappear, I never really felt like he was gone. I never worried that he was gone. I didn't feel much of a disconnect from him. Somehow or another, Benji took me on his travels. I never stopped to think about it, but I could sense how he was feeling. I could feel when he was a little hungry. I could feel when he was sleeping. I just felt like he was with me, almost like somebody telling you a story, and you close your eyes, and you're listening to a really good story, and you feel like you're in the story. And that's how I felt with his journeys. But my family members, I was the youngest of six kids, and I would hear my older brothers and sisters and my mom and dad talking sometimes, a couple of them whispering, saying, uh-oh, Benji's been gone, hurt, she's going to be brokenhearted, we hope nothing's happened to him, what if he doesn't come home? And when I would overhear it, I would walk in and I'd say whatever came through, and I think it was Benji helping me, and I would just say, oh, no, he'll be back Thursday around 2, and he's coming to the back door. And they would look at me and smile and say, that's nice, honey, that's sweet, and 2 o'clock or 2:30, maybe a little bit later, he would walk up to the back door on Thursday and just meow, walk in, have his food, take a big old nap, and act like he hadn't even been gone. I even remember one time when there was a snowstorm, really terrible snowstorm, and this is when I realized I could do more than listen. I could actually communicate out to him, because at that point, I was worried about him because there was a lot of snow coming down. I grew up in Michigan when I was a child, and a lot of snow coming down, and so I remember laying in my bed saying, okay, this time I'm worried. This time I need to see you, and I need to see you soon because I'm scared. And I fell sound asleep, and all of a sudden my eyes opened up, and I woke up out of the, you know, deep sleep a few hours later, and he was sitting at my window, which I lived in an old-fashioned house, and it was a big, two-story. He had to climb a tree that was about 20 feet from the house and leap from the tree to get to my skinny windowsill. He had never, ever come to my windowsill before. And the window even opened out. In order for me to push the window open, I had to open it out a bit. And somehow or another, he just knew that I called him, and he showed right up to me. He came right to where I was. And I somehow or another reached my little girl hands out and grabbed him before he fell and brought him in and dried him off and laid him on the bed and remember hugging him, smiling, and saying thank you and going back to sleep. And that's when I started to realize it was a two-way communication. We could call out to our animals. We could express our needs. We could express our wishes and our desires. And that was the love of my life when I was growing up. He was a better teacher probably than many of my grade school teachers.
Boy, I would say so. I didn't read about that. That I think is just phenomenal. And it also implies tremendous trust and belief
mm-hmm.
in that connection.
Mm-hmm.
Or so it seems to me. Yours and his. I mean, apparently it comes naturally, or came naturally to Benji. And to you as well, once you realized it.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie, I know that now you can connect with animals that you have never met, distant animals, from their photos. And you can hear what they're telling you as clearly from that, excuse me please, as if you were personally connected with a family member on a phone or even in your personal visits. Can you explain how you can do that?
Absolutely. Intuition is what I call this. Some people have seen the television show that was on the Animal Planet for a while called The Pet Psychic. You know, you were mentioning in the introduction about how long animals have been communicating with us, and it truly goes way back in history. And when I began doing this about 13 years ago, professionally doing it, people who would call me, I've never advertised, and so people who would call me had heard about me from somebody else who had worked with me. And they would call and they would often say, I don't understand this, I don't know what this means, I don't know how it works, but my dog has an issue and I need help, or my horse is hurting and can you help me? So people love their animals enough to when they needed help they would call, but they had no clue what the heck I was doing or how I did it. Fortunately, after the pet psychic came on television a few years back, now people call and say, are you like the pet psychic? So they have a little bit more of a sense of the profession that has been around for a long time in our country. It's been around since the 70s, professional animal communicators helping people. And so now when people call, they're a little bit more open, and I need that on the other end. It's helpful because this work happens by my heart connecting with their heart over the phone, And as you know, there's nothing like animals to bring us into our hearts. The reason all of us who love animals and have animals in our lives, the main reason is because of the love, because of the love we can give, the love we can receive, the love we can share, and the joy and the happiness and all of that that goes with the love. So with that comes an open channel from heart to heart. So I always tell a new client on the telephone, in order for me to connect with your animal, I have the photo in front of me, but what I need, first of all, is your permission, because the animals can sense. If the person doesn't want to do this, if the person thinks this is hokey and stupid and they don't even know why they called and, you know, bah humbug, and they're going to prove me wrong, then I tell them, you will prove me wrong, because you'll block the energy. And so I just say to them, if you're open, and I assume since you've scheduled the appointment, I have your permission, and they say, yes, you do have my permission. And then I tell them, it must be your intention for us to connect with the animals, because the loyalty that exists between an animal and their human is very strong. And they don't know who Terry O'Hara is when I come tapping in telepathically and say, tell me how your stomach's feeling. I understand you've been throwing up and nobody knows why. They want to know, first of all, who are you? And why are you here? So the way I set that up before they even have to ask that of me is, this is who I am, but I'm here because of your human. Do you feel your human's concern? Do you feel that your human is giving me permission? And do you understand that I'm here to just be a voice for you? So I explain to the human what I need, and then I explain to the animal why I'm there. And that opens up the door for conversation, for an intuitive consult, as I call them. And then the way in which I will receive information from the animals, because they weren't raised in our schools. They weren't taught to only think with their brain, and they weren't taught to only think, you know, A plus B equals C. They live in a way in which all of us used to live, and that is with all senses wide open. In our culture, unfortunately, we've deadened a lot of our senses. We use a lot of things with really strong smells and scents and perfumes and colognes and deodorants and everything to kill the natural sense ability that we do have. Well, animals, as you know, you watch them sniff the ground, and you know they love taking in information from their senses. So what I do is open up all of my senses to listen to the animal in a much broader way when the animals are connecting with me. So they may send me feelings like happiness, joy, sadness, grief, anger, frustration. So they may emote these actual feelings, and I'll feel the emotions in me. They may also send a physical sensation. So I may, as I focus on the animal, I imagine I am the animal, and all of a sudden my stomach might start to turn and I feel nauseous. And I'll say to the person, I'm getting a lot of nausea, and I feel like your dog is probably having issues with throwing up, or you know, must be feeling nauseous most of the time, and tells me he can't eat at all. And the person will say, yep, he hasn't eaten in 3 days. So I might feel the actual physical sensation in my body in addition to the emotions. Another way in which animal communicators receive information is visuals. We may see what I call little snippets or snapshots, or kind of like a little short video where I'm looking through the animal's eyes and they'll show me what's important to them. So if the animal's worried about something, for example, I just did a consult earlier today, and at the end I always ask, is there anything else the animal wants to say and or clarify that I've said for them? And all of a sudden the animal showed me a young lady walking out the door, and then I got the feeling of sadness. So I said to the woman on the phone, and I heard the word summer. So I said to the woman on the phone, he says something about all summer long, and the girls walked out the door, and now he's sad. And she said, oh, that's my daughter. She was home from college for the summer, and she just left 3 days ago, and he's been sad ever since she left. So that started with me getting a little bit of a visual. So I saw a person walking out a door. So visuals are another way. And sometimes I will get symbolism or metaphoric kind of messages, and I'll say to the person, I'm not sure if this is symbolic or literal, but I'll tell you what I'm getting, and we can make sense of it together. And then finally, I will get some words, but I don't get a lot of words because they don't think in a lot of words or communicate in a lot of words. And I remind people of that because we are interpreters as animal communicators. We have to open up, receive, feel, sense, hear, taste, see, all these different things, and then we turn it into words. So I refer to it as like quickly putting a puzzle together in order to turn it into words on behalf of the animal for the human's ears.
My goodness. That certainly is a huge array of communication there. And But I can understand it because everything is energy. So you are picking up absolutely every streamer of energy from that animal, and it comes in all of those ways that, that you spoke about, which is rather natural, come to think of it, isn't it?
Absolutely. I was just thinking that as you said that. Yep, it's what we all could be and should be doing all the time.
Terry, please mention your website now. I'd like you to do it later on, too, but if we start running out of time, I might forget.
Okay,
please
sure.
Mention
my,
it.
The name of my business is Animal Wise, and that's my website. It's AnimalWize, so it's animalwise.com.
And no space in there at all?
No.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I love your site. And I read that article there that includes your home visit, and you went specifically because you were called to talk to a hamster. And would you please go ahead and tell that story? It's another one with all those specifics.
Sure. Well, For the listeners, you can go, and this is an interview. Actually, this gentleman contacted me on behalf of 5280 Magazine, which is in Denver, Colorado, which is it used to be in Colorado. I've just moved out to Oregon in this past year. And he called me and said, I'm extremely skeptical, but I've heard from a couple of people that you can do what you say you can do, and I would like to interview you. And I said, sure, because I think skepticism is fine. I think it's normal and it's healthy, as long as it's not skepticism with an attitude. And so I said, sure, and I welcomed him to join me on a consultation to someone's home. I said, well, I have a home visit coming up. Would you like to go attend it? Because when I very first started my business, I only did home visits, meaning going to the people's homes and talking to the animals in person. And I actually drove all over. I drove an hour, 2 hours. I drove everywhere, all over the Denver metropolitan area and outside of that area, because I felt, first of all, that that's what I should do, and second of all, I needed the experience, and third of all, I wanted the contact with the humans and the animals. So I did that the first 5 years of my business, and it wasn't until people started to say, can you please talk to Uncle Tom, and he lives in Iowa, and he really needs you, but they don't have a communicator there, that finally my clients started pushing me to do it over the phone. And the more I did it over the phone, the more I realized how great that was, and I didn't have to drive all over the place. And so I began to do most of my work. Eventually, within about a year, I was doing about 90% of my work by telephone, and now that's the case still. But it was good timing, because this gentleman called me, and I was going to be doing a home visit. And it turned out that I was going to a home that had 3 horses, a dog, a cat, a hamster, and a fish. And so they wanted me to talk to all of the animals, and I said, sure. So when we got to the hamster, before they even said anything to me, I immediately got a very chemical taste in my mouth, just looking at the hamster and tuning into the hamster, and they hadn't said anything yet. I was just kind of tuning in and meeting them. And they said, after I got the taste in my mouth, then I also got the image of a piece of food and reddish or pinkish coloring. And then they said to me, he's not eating lately. And I said right away, there's something in his food. It tastes like chemicals. I think it's food coloring or dye. They went and got the food, brought it out. There it was, this food that had these little red specks throughout it. And there was a chemical on the food that was making him sick, and he was actually smart enough to stop eating so they would change his food. He wasn't dying or anything, but he was trying to get them to pay attention, and indeed, they had bought a new food. They didn't get their regular food. They were all out, or they went to a different store, or something had happened, and immediately he was able to show me, this is not good, and he was warning them, I can't live on this. I can't keep eating this. It's a chemical, and it will kill me. So that's an example of me seeing something and tasting something and really getting a strong sense. And then I think you also really liked the part about the frog. They had a
frog.
Oh,
I love that.
I forgot about the frog until just now. The frog was from outside, and their little boy was very precious, and he said, this is Freddie, my frog. And right away I heard Freddie say, can I go home now? And so, of course, I didn't want to say that right away to the boy, but the boy started asking questions about, is he happy, does he like things here, blah, blah, blah. And he was in a tiny space, and I said, well, Freddie really misses his family, and he misses his home. and he loves you, and he says you're taking such good care of him, which he really did. He felt very special. They said every time they walked into the room, Freddie came out from under his rock and would greet them and be social. He was in like a terrarium kind of thing. And he had only been there for a few days. But I said, he really is ready to go home. And the little boy got tears in his eyes and said, but I love him. And I said, I know, and he wants you to love him in his own home. And they called me a few days later and said, you know, they let the little boy make the decision, and he woke up one morning and said, I'm ready to send Freddie to his home. And now he goes outside on his land and talks to Freddie, because I said, you can talk to him whether you see him or not. He'll feel you. And it's not quite as much fun as seeing him, but it was really wonderful to teach this little boy how to love an animal and enjoy him for a while in captivity, but to set him free again so he can go back out. And it was very beautiful the way the family embraced it, and that he was allowed to have his emotions and nobody judged him. And he left the room at first when he started to cry, and then he came back, and we just kept right on talking. And the reporter was extremely impressed by the whole thing. I mean, his mouth was practically hanging open the whole time I was doing this consult, because he just couldn't believe not only the accuracy, but also the love and the connections and the honesty and the communication depth that was going on between a loving family and all of their critters.
Well, that did come out in the article.
Good.
And I was so glad. The word, excuse me, please, convert comes to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, skepticism is healthy when it's really questioning without an attitude, without a barrier that is set up about, I'm going to prove that you're a fraud type thing.
Exactly.
And so that sort of attitude is what so many more of us really need to adopt, an open mind and an open heart.
Well, and I have to say that is the beauty of the work that I do. I have just people contacting me on a daily basis who are what I call blossoming. They're opening up, and they're now saying, you know, I've heard about you from my dentist and my next-door neighbor and read an article about you. And so they've heard about me more than they ever used to in the past because of, you know, me having reached more people, which is fine. But they're coming more ready, and they're coming more open. And I'm just watching a lot of people right now opening up in so many ways on the planet, and opening their hearts and learning to live in a place of love. And I believe the animals want to help us. They want to help us all. So anybody out there struggling who's trying to be more in their heart, but maybe they go to a job every day that they're not happy, by all means, when you come home, soak up the love and let your heart open up when you feel safe and you're at home with your loved ones, your furry loved ones and your human loved ones. Because wherever we can open our hearts, wherever it feels safe, is where we have growth.
Would you say that this really is soul-level energy connection happening?
Absolutely. I believe what I've learned from many experiences with these animals, and I feel I'm still learning. I teach classes, and I do trainings and workshops and retreats and apprenticeship program, etc., and I always say, I'm still learning. I never want to stop learning. I believe the animals are our teachers in so many ways, from the spiritual realm, coming in as a soulmate, coming in with the feeling that we have known them before, we've been together before. There are some that come and they're just, I'm here to be a dog and dance around and have fun and lighten her heart up while she's going through a hard time. They have all different purposes why different animals come into our lives. And yes, I do believe that there's a deep soul connection that's occurring in most relationships that happen between animal and human.
You mentioned the sadness that family fur companion was feeling. There can be many stressful situations in a home between the family members. My understanding is that animals pick those up as well. No, I mean, not just sadness or joy, but the stressful things. Have any animals communicated those types of situations to you?
Absolutely. Just yesterday I did a consultation with a woman whose dog said to me they aren't happy, and I said to the dog, who? And he showed me the mom and the dad, but they're a couple, but not a married couple. And she said that she was getting ready to leave the country and leave the relationship, and the dog showed me a lot of anger and not physical abuse fighting, but just a lot of fighting energy, a lot of grumpy energy, and just was so worried. The dog was so worried because he loved both of the people but was extremely feeling loyal to the female, and wanted to make sure she was going to be okay, wanted to take care of her and wanted to make sure she was going to be okay. And animals don't hesitate to just put it out on the line. I don't screen anything. I say what I get. And so sometimes they will say, there's too much fighting going on, or I'm worried about her, or I remember one client quite a few years back where we were doing this consult with the dogs, two elder dogs, and the husband and wife on the phone, and out of the clear blue, the dog says, he, meaning the dad, he needs to go to the doctor and he needs to go soon. There's a problem, and he's going to be sorry if he doesn't. And so I said this to the man, not knowing what he was going to think, but it's not my job to screen it. So, of course, he listened to his dog. As the wife said later, he won't listen to me, but he listened to his dog. And he went to the doctor, and he had a hernia, and it was about to rupture. And the doctor said, you would have been in an emergency situation within about a week. So sometimes they will just blurt out what I call wisdom from above, you know, where they want us to know what's going on, where they want to help us. They will, if we are sick, they will help us with our sicknesses. They will often take on what we have. You know, I have a client who suffers from migraines, and her dog has headaches and will squint his eyes with the light and will take some of her pain from his head, her head into his head to alleviate some of her pain, because he's more advanced, in my opinion, at knowing what to do with that pain and how to channel it down out of his body and back into the earth. So I have a lot of examples where people will say, you know, I would swear my animal is helping me with my bad knee because now he's got a bad knee, or my cancer because he's been diagnosed with cancer. So, yes, they are helping us on very many levels, from emotional to spiritual to physical.
There are those service dogs that can detect prior to the onset of some sort of perhaps an episode with epilepsy or something else, that the human, a condition the human has, but does not get any symptoms of it slowly. It's just there. And these animals sense before that happens and can let the human know so that they can take medication that is either preventive or would ameliorate the effects. Have you met any of those animals?
Yes, I feel that animals are helping us like that on a daily basis, whether it is with seizures or illnesses or just sit down, you're too stressed and wound up and you need to relax. And when I hear the scientific community give credit to the fact that, yes, maybe animals can do this. Yes, maybe we have proven they can sense seizures. I mean, the scientists of the world often come forward kicking and screaming until something is proven, which I completely understand the importance of proof, and I understand how they think and how they operate. However, I've learned from the animals, it's a lot more than smelling, because they often think that they smell a chemical change, perhaps on the person's breath, perhaps in their scent coming out of their nose or something. When I've tuned into an animal that can detect a seizure or a fainting spell or a problem that's coming on, they are showing me tuning into the entire human being's physical realm, but also their aura and also their energy field and many other capacities. So they are often sensing something coming up, whether it's a seizure or a heart attack. They are often sensing something in so many realms that I don't believe the scientists are able to prove all of those realms. Fortunately, there's enough tangible, provable stuff out there that there's now being given credibility to things like dogs can be a service dog and help know when somebody's going to have something go on. But I believe they're reading us all the time. They're watching us. They know when we come in the door from work if we've had a bad day. If you talk to anybody that has animals that love them, they'll say, well, on the days when I come home the most sad or the most grumpy or the most unhappy, boy, that's when they won't leave me alone. They rub up against me. They kiss me. They follow me everywhere. And sometimes they'll accidentally say, they're so needy, and I'm not in a good space. And I say, oh, no, you got it wrong. They're not needy. They're helping you. we forget to let the animals help us sometimes, and that's one thing I would like to tell the listeners is, as caregivers of animals, we must be receivers as well, or we're not letting them do their job. So sometimes when we feel that we need to take care of them, I'm tired, I got to get up and walk the dog, I'm tired, it's time to feed the animals, my back hurts, but I really should walk the dog. Sometimes it's okay to just lay back and say to the loved one, come be with me, I just need some of your love and your attention, then boom, the back pain seems to be a little bit better, and now we can go for a walk, and all is good. So don't forget to receive and ask for help from the animals. They are here to help us.
And we really should have that awareness, all of us, and gratitude for it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you talked with animals who know that they are dying? They know there's no such thing as death, that they simply, they visit back and forth between this physical world of ours and the spirit world, but when they know that their bodies are not going to be able to recover, do they ever tell you that they would like to have their veterinarian's help to leave?
Usually what happens, and I do work a lot with animals who are sick or terminally ill or in the process of dying, and usually what happens is because, as most people do know, animals live in the moment. They don't worry about the past, and they don't fret about the future. They are completely 100% in the moment, which is why animals don't, you know, get upset. I mean, yes, they have memories, so someone might say, well, I adopted this dog, and anytime he sees someone in a baseball cap, he runs and hides. So someone in a baseball cap must have hurt him. Yes, but that's not worrying about the past. That's a memory, so that's different. But when they are very much so in the moment, that's what death and dying is here to teach us, is you have to be in the moment with death and dying. Now, the beautiful thing with animals is we have the opportunity to offer euthanasia if it is correct. It's also a tremendous burden. So it is it's a opportunity, but it's a burden. With humans, we don't have that opportunity, nor do many people believe in that, and I don't even work in the human realm in that respect, so I can't even comment on that. But what animals are here to show us through their death is they are here to show us about death and dying, because you know what? We're all going to do it, and we're all probably going to know somebody else who does it, and or, if not, help several somebody else's in our lifetime who are going to die. And the animals are here to show us death and show us dying. And I learned way back early on when I had a dog from my age of 14 to my age of 28, and if you can imagine those years, 14 to 28, I mean, he and I were side by side, and he knew me better than anybody. I became who I was with the help of this dog. His name was Keisha. And when Keisha was sick, this is when I actually learned about the profession of animal communication, because when he was sick, a friend of mine said, maybe you might want to take him to an animal communicator before he dies so you can hear what he has to say before he goes. And I said, what is that? I'm 28 at this point. When I was a child, I could hear the animals. When I became a teenager, I decided I was a weirdo and I was a freak, and I put it in the drawer and tucked it aside, said, I'm not thinking about this, I'm not talking about this, and I made it go away. And that's very common for a lot of people who are telepathic or intuitives or whatever, because we're in a culture that doesn't embrace it, you want to fit in. But when I was 28 and this person said this to me, I thought, I love my dog so much, I'll do anything. And I'm open. I'm an open-minded person, so sure. And I called the person, and her name was Penelope Smith, who I then learned later is one of the pioneers of animal communication in our country, and took him to her, and she told me, he wants you to stay out of his death. He's here to show you about death and dying. You're going to be helping many, many people with their animals and people as well with death and dying, and he's here to show you death. And because I had been very sad prior to going to Penelope, because my father died in January of 1987, and my mother died on Mother's Day in May of 1987. So I had lost both of my parents, and right in between that time, Keisha was diagnosed terminally ill with rectal cancer. And I looked at him and said, you can't do it, buddy. You can't die in the same year as my mom and dad. I don't know if I can do it. I knew I could get through my mom and dad's death. I knew I was going to lose my mom and dad someday, but as many of my clients will say, it's harder to lose an animal sometimes than a human loved one that's an elder, that you kind of have this readiness to let go of them at some point. And so I told him I needed a year, and during that year was when I heard about taking him to an animal communicator, and she said, he wants you to stay out of his death. He doesn't want you to help. He's here to teach you about death and dying, and you will take this experience and you will help others. And he did not suffer. He was as peaceful as could be. One day he stopped eating, and he got weak, and he was just sleeping on the bed doing his thing. After about 3 days of that, I said to him, I don't know how long I can do this. I feel it's my job to do something for you. I don't know what that something is, but I don't know if I should be putting you down. But he wasn't showing me any signs of suffering, and this is what I teach my clients, is watch to see if they're suffering. And I guide people on what to look for and all of that. So Keisha was not showing me signs of suffering. And my job was to stay in the moment, stay in the moment, stay in the moment. Be with him, be present, love him, and let him do what he needed to do. Unless he showed me signs of suffering, then I could go and get help with the vet. And what he did was, one day, a couple days later, I told him, for my sanity's sake, I said, okay, you have until Friday. It was Sunday when he stopped eating. I said, you have until Friday, and then I'm calling the vet. Because there's also the human component to all of this. The dog was peaceful. This often happens. The animal's very peaceful. I'm fine. I'm dying. It's all good. And then the person's going, but, what's the right thing, and what should I be doing, and how can I live without you? And so we're going through all of our emotional turmoil. So for my sanity's sake, I said, you have until Friday, and I'll totally let you do what you need to do, and then I'm calling the vet for help if you're not gone by then. And I'll embrace it as best as I can. But I had to draw a line for me and my sanity. And so Friday morning, he was laying on the bed, and he lifted up his front legs, kind of got up into a sitting position, put his head back, and let out this beautiful howl. He had never howled his whole life. He was not a howler. And he let out this beautiful howl. It wasn't a cry. It wasn't a scream. My sister and friend were in the room, so I was glad I had witnesses. And then he closed his eyes and brought his head back down, laid down real gently, and he was gone. And I just sat there in disbelief of realizing I just witnessed death. And even though I was with my mother when she died, and I was with my father just before he died, there was something about witnessing what Keisha showed me, the beauty of it, the power of it, and that it was all okay, and that we're all going to do it. And then I knew he wasn't gone. I knew just his body had stopped. And so we all have to realize that when they do die, they're not gone. They're spirits. We're all spirits, and their spirits are still with us. And as I tell my clients, they live on in your heart, because you know what? You are who you are because of them spending the time with you. And they don't want you to sit there and remember the last few days or the last month when everything was bad. They want you to remember the beautiful times and the happy times and how much you've grown and learned together and how much you shared together. And they are indeed, as you said, not gone. They're still with us, all of them.
Do you ever communicate with any of the animals after they leave physically?
I do. I do connect with animals in the spirit world. I find that some are readily available, real ready and real present, and can come forward, as I call it. Some are more what feels to me like more farther away. I don't know how to articulate it other than like that, where I can sense them and feel them and get the gist of how they're doing. And I don't see them, you know, much to the disappointment of some people, I don't see them running in a grassy field being a happy dog. They are a spirit now. And some people want to believe that, and that's fine. And I can be wrong. You know, everyone's got their own philosophies and their own religious beliefs and et cetera. And as I say to people, I can't call 1-800-SPIRIT-WORLD and get validation on this. So all I can do is tell you what I get, and you trust what feels right. And if it doesn't feel right, then you'll know it. And so I can connect with them. I can give them enough information, especially if it's a client I've never worked with. And, you know, they'll call and say, my dog died a few weeks ago, and I just learned about you, and I'd like to check and get clarity on some things about what happened before he died, or if we're working together, we can help them during the dying process, during the death, and then later check in with them, however that unfolds. But usually enough information comes forward to where the person is confident I'm connecting with their animal loved one in the spirit world. And I do find some of them announce, like my boy Keisha, he simply said, I love you, and we're done. We're complete. What we came together to do, we did, and we're very complete. I will forevermore be with you in your heart, but I don't feel his spirit around me. I don't feel him hanging out with me like I do another dog whose name is Jake, who's just died last year. So it is different as far as how you feel them, where you feel them, where you find them, and what purpose they continue to serve.
Mm-hmm. Well, Terry, I don't expect you to accept my experiences as validation, because I don't have an 800 number to the spirit. Well, I guess in a way I do, because of Matthew and the others.
Right.
Many times I have spoken with dogs in the spirit world. Ours, of course, family dogs whom I have met, but also dogs that I have never met. And they do show me their bodies, their etheric bodies, but they are perfect. They're absolutely perfect. As a young adult, and I do see them, sometimes they pose just like a show dog, first of all. And then I do see them just running like the wind. Sometimes with the wild animals, the animals that people can see on safaris in the herds.
Mm-hmm.
And so their etheric bodies, I guess you could say discarnate bodies. We say discarnate as if there is nothing there at all.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because we are given just the two choices. It's solid or it's nothing. But etheric bodies do have a substance to them that our eyes can't detect. But when the animals send me their images, they are in their perfect etheric bodies, just like the humans that I see. So perhaps that is one of my gifts, because I certainly don't have that whole realm of yours. But that, at least from my experiences, you, I would just want to assure you that Keisha and Jake are there in their perfect etheric bodies.
And when you say etheric bodies, what about the fact that they may have been a horse before, and then a dog, and then a human, and have a whole variety of physical forms? You feel they're showing you the most recent?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the most recent. It's sort of like the humans that who send me images. They may in another lifetime, they may have been in an entirely different civilization with a different type of body. So it is only the last lifetime that I would be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
That they have told me about.
Mm-hmm.
That they send images of.
That makes sense. Yes, I often sense what I'm getting from you a little bit is what I often sense when I'm talking with animals in the spirit world is they have a lot of pride. They like to show off who they were and what they were and how beautiful they were, and you know, the posing like a show dog. When you mention that, I feel a lot of pride energy when you say that.
Mm-hmm.
They do. They're very proud of their lifetime, as they should be.
Yes, and it's not vanity. It
no.
is just what you said, the lifetime,
mm-hmm.
which really was service to the people with whom they were,
mm-hmm.
the love, the loyalty, and all the ways that you mentioned that they help us.
Absolutely. And then they get ready for the next journey, and they get all excited for that, too.
They do. They do indeed. Mm-hmm. And yet, when there is the reunion of souls, and they are souls, it's just a different a different body that they chose for this last lifetime. There is that instantaneous recognition. It's the love bonding that we have with them. So we will see them exactly as we knew them, but when they were in vibrant health, and they will see us that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is, it's a beautiful system.
It is.
Yeah, God did that well.
Yes, indeed. We're fortunate for that.
Could you speak a bit about the instruction, please? I know you give workshops. You teach animals. You teach humans, people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what you teach them,
okay.
And that's what I would love to know.
Sure. What I have been offering for many years is classes on how to communicate with the animals, and I have an introductory class called Animal Chat, which is a brief workshop to just begin to introduce how animals communicate, give people a sense of it, give them a chance to begin to practice it a little bit and just get their feet wet with it and just have some fun with it. And many people come to that class. I've taught it for many years in Colorado, about ten years now, maybe. And now I've been teaching it out in Oregon. And I will travel if there's a place. Sometimes people want to sponsor it. And so, for example, I have a client in Scottsdale right now, and she's talking with a friend about maybe they might want to sponsor it. If people can get a certain number of people to a location, then I can travel and take my classes on the road. And after Animal Chat is my next level, and it's called Animals as Teachers. And that's an all-day retreat that I do where I help people then really begin to practice opening up their own intuitive abilities as well as learn how animals are teachers in our lives. And then the third level is called Animals and Humans, the Journey. And that is to begin to really bring them together with completely breaking down their barriers and all their previous notions of who they were as a human and just being as open as possible to let the animals shift them, help them learn. I've been teaching that one for many years on a rescue farm in Colorado because there's nothing like talking to a turkey or a chicken or a goose or a donkey because you don't have perhaps as many preconceived notions as if you were talking to a dog or a cat or a horse. And so it gives people a chance to really just open up and listen. It's all about listening to the animals. And I also have created classes over the years to help people with understanding animals. There's one that I do called You Want Me to Do What? And that one is to help people that are dealing with training issues or behavior issues or just concerns about how animals behave or what they're doing in their house. Or, you know, it's not a training class. I'm not a trainer. I refer out to trainers. But it's a really good class to help people understand why do animals do what they do and to start thinking from their perspective, because we're so busy coming from our human perspective when we want an animal to do something for us or with us that we forget, oh, yeah, that's right, they are a dog or they are a cat, and I got to remember they have their own perspective as to why they might be doing something. And so if we can get people, the humans, to understand a little bit more why a cat might be spraying around the house because they're an indoor-only kitty, and there's a cat that keeps coming up to their front door, and the only thing they know to do is spray and mark their turf so they feel safe in their only place they're allowed to be. And so humans immediately want that stopped, of course, and understandably so. But at the same time, if we can take some time to understand why the cat's doing it, help the cat express what's going on from their perspective, then more of a solution can come forward. So that's what that type of class is about. And the classes are on my website. You can go to animalwise.com and look at classes there for more information so you can get more of a detail. And then most recently I've started teleclasses once a month. You can attend them live by signing up, and they're only $15, and I have different topics. Last month was dog nutrition. This coming up month is cat nutrition. I'm going to have a guest speaker, a holistic veterinarian, joining me. And so those are available to listen to live, or right now I'm doing it with a company that it's available within 30 days of the time, so you can sign up for it and then listen to it at your convenience over the computer or over the telephone. And in the near future, as I can keep up with all the demands of my business, I will eventually have them on my website so people can just purchase them and listen to them that way too. Trying to do things very affordable and very simple, so they can continue to gain a little bit more knowledge as they go along with their animal teachers.
Is it in the classes that you have found that the children are the most responsive of all of the attendees?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the children's class that I've taught over the years, it's an introduction to animal communication. And I usually tell people, you know, with a 3-hour class for adults, by the end of the third hour, they're just starting to get a glimmer of what this is all about. And by the end of the first hour with children, they're having full conversations with the animals. It's quite beautiful. As long as they're there and they're open to it and they believe in it, magic happens. It just, the animals are so excited when you're open and you're listening that it's not a matter of, oh, they'll finally talk to you, because they're talking to you all the time. They're offering their connections all the time. It's just that when they see children coming, because children are wide open and much more telepathically open, I believe, and they have shown me that to be true, and the animals have taught me that to be true, that children don't hesitate to say, oh, well, that horse says that he just had hay this morning, but it was different than the hay yesterday. And, you know, the barn person says, yep, we got new hay yesterday. And the kids don't go, wow, I got it right. With the humans, it's like, well, maybe it's something about the hay, but I'm not sure, and I don't know. I could be wrong, but could they maybe have had new hay? You know, and the adult head starts questioning themselves and judging themselves. The kids don't do that. They get that all, you know, out of the way. They don't even have that. It's wonderful.
Yeah, they don't bother with all that analytical head chatter.
That's correct. It's wonderful to see. So, yes, children are much more wide open to learning.
Terry, I have to interrupt just for a moment to mention the guest on my next show, and then I'll get right back to you.
Okay.
The Janice Rose will be my guest on October 1st. Excuse me, please. Janice was 13 in 1939. When his happy and simple family life in the countryside of his native Latvia was shattered by World War I. And just a few years later, because that was occupied by Germany, he and many other Latvian teenage boys were separated from their families and sent to Germany. While he was there, he combined university studies and working for the French occupation forces. And at the end of the war, because everything in Europe still was either devastated or being occupied, he went to Venezuela, where he earned advanced degrees in biology and zoology. And he continued his dedication to preserving Earth's animal and plant kingdoms, and working for peace in our world. With two others, Janice co-edited a really remarkable book. It's a collection of 90-some internationally known persons' descriptions of what does it mean to be human. So please join Janice and me October 1st. Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome.
From all of your experiences, what do you feel is most important for us to know about caring for our animals?
I would say the most important thing is, as people know already, is they refer to animal love as unconditional love. What I like to teach people is it's pure love. There is no such thing as conditional love, so there can't be anything such thing as unconditional love, because love is love, and this is pure love that the animals are sharing with us every day. And the animals are deeply disturbed if you're not offering pure love to yourself. If you are not being good to yourself, if you are harming yourself, if you are judging yourself, and if you are taking really great care of them and lousy care of you, it worries them and it troubles them and it confuses them and it causes them to work harder on you and for you and with you. So the most important thing to work towards is balance, where you are sharing pure love with yourself, with your animals, with everybody you interact with on a daily basis. That is the harmony and balance that animals are here to help us all feel and create.
Terry, thank you. Thank you so much. so much for being with us today, and especially for, well, everything you have said. But yes, love is the key.
Indeed it is. Thank you so much for having me. And one more thing I did want to mention is if any of the listeners would like to receive my free newsletter, you can just go to my website and email Terry, click on email Terry, and just ask to be added to the email mailing list, and I'll be happy to send you out my quarterly animal wellness newsletter. And thank you so much for having your hearts open to all the animals of the planet.
Well, Matthew thanks you as well.
Mm-hmm.
His love of animals is much like yours. And, of course, the understanding of them. So thank you again, Terry, and from Matthew and me to you and to all of our listeners, love and peace. Goodbye now.